Okay. We're going to finish up with the slides.
All right.
And then
is
we'll
this
dive
thing
in.
On?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good.
Good enough.
I can hear you.
Okay, as long as you can hear me. Mm-hmm. Steve.
So here's a little more detail of what's going on inside the vinyl record. There's sort of two methods that go on here, depending on what patent minefield you want to go read about. There's interesting patents, especially in this time code. So this Tractor Scratch product is a German company, and they really do use SMPTE time code. If you go search on Google...
Start again.
So we're going to finish up with the slideshow, and then demo a few last things, do some Q&A at the end. Call it good. So here's a slide for the control vinyl. So here you can see it's a sine wave, 1 kilohertz. And you can see that the left and right channels are 90 degrees out of phase, you know, quadrature for anyone that studies how these vinyl things work. So that's how the record can figure out exactly which direction it's going from, you know, backwards or forwards. And you know at 1 kilohertz, you know at the speed, so you can figure all that. And you can't see it in this. If I zoomed way in, maybe my battery's dying in my laser pointer. If you zoom way in, you'll see that little bit of noise hash sitting on that sine wave. So that way you can figure out exactly that you're 2 minutes, two minutes and 37.4 seconds into this file.
Hmm? What kind of batteries?
They're big D batteries. I'm not going to worry about it. So that's the control vinyl world, and the CDs have the same exact thing. In fact, several manufacturers, not all, let you go download that WAV file, you know, and then you burn your own CD if you want to put it on a CD, or you know, burn your own vinyl if you want to make your own vinyl. They don't have that yet, but they'll be able to 3D print vinyls pretty soon.
Actually, that's unlikely, but they are at NAMM. They do have a make your own vinyl.
Yeah. Nice. Here's a little bit more about the USB. Driver world, right? Because what goes on inside your computer here, you have the physical USB gadgets you plug in, whether it's your printer or your USB pregnancy test or USB, you know, vibration, you know, massage thing, whatever USB thing you use, plugs in. The kernel manager handles that. And there's, in a Windows world, if you're a Mac world, you're using Core audio drivers. Sadly, a couple years ago, they released a new version of OS and Apple, and they broke Core audio. Like, all audio interfaces stopped working. Anyone remember this?
Yeah.
Yeah. This was a bad idea. They broke Core audio, and I won't tell you the sob story. That took a lot of work. But if you're in a Windows world, that's this bulk of this slide. You have WDM, which is one of the drivers that's like all the little mouse click sounds. Hey, thanks, Gary. Beautiful. WDM drivers. But a lot of these products don't use WDM. They use a thing called either ASIO, or people can create their own custom, but ASIO is one of the things that most people use in a Windows world. And so basically it replaces what's going on between the kernel manager and the software with this driver. So that's what's going on under the hood with your USB drivers for anything you have, printer, you know, anything at all. So sometimes when this product gets plugged in, sometimes the software you install, like in the software here, the Serato DJ, it'll install a driver for you. Sometimes the product you plug in has a driver built right into it. You plug it in, the driver gets inserted for you, and you don't even know it. But all these things happen under the hood with USB drivers, talking between the hardware ports on your computer and the software that you bought from the vendor or is already on your computer, what have you. So that's a good mental picture of what USB does and how the drivers work. So that's a USB driver. So some of these products, depending on what software you've loaded, loads a different driver. So some of the contexts when you use these DJ mixers, if you open somebody else's software, a different driver gets substituted in there for you. So it does this stuff on the fly if needed.
Is the Core audio thing fixed now?
The Core audio thing is fixed. It took about a year for the Apple guys to fix that.
Using Core audio
here, exactly. Yeah, what it broke is the ability for us to make our device the master clock in a USB world. And what that did is it ruined our ability to do that thing and to do all what we're needing to do in 7 to 10 milliseconds. It just slowed everything down to the point where you couldn't even use the product. Not a good thing. And the joke around the office, not a good joke, but one that I still use to this day, which is sad. But Steve Jobs is still dead when the Core audio stuff, it was bad. That was our bad joke. Core audio broke because Steve Jobs wasn't around. Not a good joke, but that's my
it's an interesting
that's my
issue,
six sense of humor.
It's a thought piece.
interesting idea. So we talked about some of this already. How do you make the MP3 file or whatever file type you've selected? It could be WAV file. These products support 2496 if you want to get crazy with, you know, hi-fi world when you go to these Ibiza and all the nightclubs that do, you know, have the serious 100,000-watt sound systems. They want 2496, you know, audio files, so you can do WAV files and the whole thing. So you can get crazy with high sample rates and high bit depths and all that stuff. So we already talked about this a little bit, where how do you make that MP3 file sound like it, and you have to emulate the needle response when you play it back at any given speed. So most of the products have that ability to do this. And here's what we talked about earlier, that the turntable has to be plugged into a phono circuitry, a phono input stage, and this is the curve that Steve was talking about earlier, where it's reducing the bass. This is 20 hertz, 100 hertz, 1,000 hertz.
20K.
20K.
It crosses over at 1K?
Yep. So here's 1K, and then it boosts the heck out of it. And this is 20 dB of boost we're talking here. 20 dB is a lot, by the way.
At 20K.
Yeah, at 20K.
Because so the little, obviously, the lower frequencies move have a high amplitude. So if you see a WAV file, you're seeing, yes?
So I think I just finally understood what you said. Maybe I can. So when you play it back at half speed, it's going to shift the frequencies down, and then you're going to push, you know, something that was previously in the mid-range, your 1 kilohertz or your, whatever, your 500 hertz down to 100 hertz, and it's going to boost that because the RIAA curve
doesn't change. Yes, it's constant.
Yeah. Well, when you're playing a record at speed, it was recorded with the inverse RIAA.
Yeah, but yeah, that's
it. And so when you play it back, everything lines up,
so it's flat. Yeah,
exactly.
You slow it down.
Optimally.
Now what you're going to do is get a significant bass boost. But it's going to be interesting. So the content that was at 100 hertz now gets down to 50 hertz. It's going to be boosted much more than it was before.
From the playback curve.
The playback curve.
Yeah, so, and again, if you have the low frequencies are having to move, just like in a WAV file,
right.
You have low frequencies because we don't hear physiologically low-level, low frequencies because of the Fletcher-Munson curves.
Not audible.
If you can, well, even down here, of course, if you heard low frequency, low level, as well as you hear higher frequency, then, as JJ says, your heartbeat and blood flow would drive you insane because you can hear thub-dub just as well. So this is why there's the low frequencies in WAV files are big, and the high frequencies ride on the low frequencies, and they sort of beam more. So lower frequencies are like atmospheric barometric events. They actually change air pressure in the room.
Which is why you feel the thump in your chest when you get a good subwoofer going.
And why it sort of doesn't matter as much where the subwoofer is to an extent, because it's just really energizing the room. It also, when we're mastering, people have issues with low end typically because they aren't hearing it, and so they give it to me way, way too loud, and that the loud amplitudes have high frequencies riding on top of them. So one of the first things I do when I get that is pull down the low frequencies in a static manner so that the higher frequencies have more headroom. And so in this case, and this is why we aren't going to be, so I looked into this a little bit, we aren't going to be seeing 3D printed records for a while, because 20K is very, very, very fine. Very fine things, and it has to be turned up a lot. So the 3D printing is going to be sort of challenging. And yes?
One interesting thing is, you know, what the stylus is resolving on a piece of vinyl is like 1/7 the wavelength of light. I mean, it's really small stuff. You ain't going to print that very well.
Not recently. You know, there's maybe when you have additive nanotechnology, probably you can do it by the atoms.
Yeah,
that would be fine.
If you can
manipulate the atoms into place, no problem.
Yeah,
we're all good. And so this on playback, the other thing, surface noise is typically higher frequency. So this is also a noise reduction methodology, is that the surface noise goes on, but you get the opposite if you have rumble. And challenges and wow and warp.
So good DJ mixers have an excellent rumble filter on the input side here, and lots of DJ mixers do not have those, and it just blows my mind that you would even make one without rumble filters, and there's a bunch of them. And he'll hear that, and it'll be a big problem at any nightclub you walk into that has a good subwoofer system. And how many nightclubs have way more subwoofer than they ever could use?
Yeah.
All of them. Yeah, exactly.
Reproduction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit more there. Here's a little discussion of crossfaders. So I don't know if you noticed what Jamie's doing up here. He was doing. We need to do a little scratching that's very fast.
Okay.
So,
what do you call that thing? Crab.
Crab scratch.
Crab scratch. There's names for some of these moves, and I don't know them. The schools teach them to you. But watch what he's doing up here with this fader up here. So it's not going to be up on the screen. We didn't bring video, so we could put it up. Watch how fast his fingers can go.
Now, if you have a pot, one of the things that I did as a young man was I wire wound resistors for Beko impedance bridges. And one of the things we also wound was pots. So you'd wind a pot around a form, and you take an electric eraser and take the shellac off of the wire, and then you rotate it, attach the wires at each end. It has a specific amount of resistance in it. Then you have a wiper that touches the open wire that shows and gives greater or lesser resistance as it goes through. What he was doing there was on the equivalent of maybe that many wires.
You mean three or four wires?
Like three or four wires.
Yeah, so it's a four-finger crab scratch.
Yeah, but inside, you know, if it was a pot that's wound, you are basically doing more than my eraser was that was taking off the shellac. How often do like crossfaders that are just regular pots die?
Probably every 2 months.
Fast. They go away, and they aren't necessarily... You can get cheap replacements or you can get very expensive replacements.
Yeah.
But it's all pretty much a constant cost because the expensive replacements die at a multiple of the cheap replacements that are pretty equivalent.
So a product development problem with these kind of products is get your head around what you just heard. He was going... That's the speed at which he was doing it. But notice the crossfader is going twice that fast. Think about that for a minute. Right? I can't even drum that fast almost. So there's a lot of movement back and forth. So first thing we did launched in, you know, what year was it? 95 or 96. TTM 52 was our first mixer into this kind of market for scratch DJs. And we put the best pot we could buy that had like 300,000. It was rated for 300,000, you know, actuations. Moving back
and
forth.
Was it Penny and Giles?
No, it wasn't Penny and Giles. It was 300,000.
Panasonic,
yeah, Mike even remembers because he's the sales guy. He knew the sales pitch. Mm-hmm. So, 300,000, and we'd get a call back in like 14 days. And a DJ, and no problem. 14 days, wore out the 300,000 thing, no problem. 300,000. So then we said, well, what's the best one you can buy? You go to the military grade guys. Penny and Giles is a UK company, and it's a rather expensive Penny and Giles, and it was like rated for 500,000. So now he's not 14 days, he's 21 days.
Oh.
Right? And that's the most expensive thing you could buy. So we had to come up with solutions. So there's several in the market, and I just put a slide together showing him where I worked. We used this thing we designed and patented ourselves. Here's got a couple Teflon rails on it. And right here is a neodymium magnet. Quite strong one by the fact. And there's a little Hall effect sensor over here and a Hall effect sensor over here. And you plug this thing and a little microprocessor reads the position.
Hall effect sense magnetism.
Yeah.
And they give you out.
So these Hall effect sensors, one at each end, can tell how far away this magnet is extremely precisely. And so you can calibrate this in the manufacturing process to adjust the end, how far you move it before it's from zero all the way off, minus or 90 dB of cut to full on 90 dB later in an extremely short amount of distance. And so the way we tested this product in 1990, whatever it was, late 90s, mid 90s, was we bought a sewing machine at the local thrift store and we hooked up the fader to
That's amazing, man.
And we put a big weight on the pedal and tanked that thing all the way up. And we left it on for like several weeks. Several weeks. So after we replaced the sewing machine three times and then tested this magnetic fader, it wasn't wearing, it wasn't cracking, it was no wear at all. So that's a great way to solve this crossfader
problem. These rain faders are incredible.
And they're smooth, too.
They're so smooth.
I mean, a bit of friction.
Yeah, so smooth.
So friction-free allows your hand to be the limiting factor rather than...
Mike May.
Yeah.
Mike May.
On the marketing side, we were the first company to develop this. We patented this, and it changed our DJ mixers in the annals of the DJ world. So we had a two-channel mixer, the 56, which was the first mixer that had this technology in it. And it was mentored by a group of guys from New York City, and they helped change our mixer status in the world, and we started selling a few, and we sold a few more, and then we were making them hundreds at a time. And just fast forward quickly, when we built the 57 with that sound card inside, that was our best mixer development ever, the first mixer with the sound card.
That was a great mixer.
Scratch Live with magnetic faders, and we sold thousands and thousands and thousands of
them. Yeah, so pretty popular, a huge, huge, huge marketplace at the time. It's since evolved. Yeah. It's since evolved into very serious stuff. Like when I was talking to Sam, is that your name?
Yeah.
I was talking to you. You have a all-in-one. It's got two little turntables, USBs. One thing does all the stuff that's up here, but it's in a, you know.
Not quite what he's doing.
But conceptually, you can still solve the same problem with a whole
then
thing.
Then that behind the wheel is different.
Yeah. And here's a couple other examples. Magnetic faders. Pioneer
DJ
came out with one. And optical faders.
What kind of rain mixer is that?
This is actually... discontinued model now.
So never
it's
mind.
A 61. Yeah, and it's all I ever needed, and it's I've had this one for 3 years.
It on the ground,
and I dropped it 2 weeks ago.
Right,
and I was going to jam with these guys. I had it in my hands, and just then it was on the floor.
Gravity worked that day.
What happened was I lost one of the ground pots on the back. Everything else is fine. Still worked.
I have one of those ground nuts, man.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, that'd be amazing.
So,
but
James, Steve.
But you still have to replace that pot every 2 months?
No. To my knowledge, we have
this
never
has been
had...
3 years. I think. 3 years. 3.5
We
years.
Have never had to replace one of these unless someone physically dropped it and bent the Teflon rails. Otherwise, they don't wear out.
Wow.
I've not seen one wear out. And how many years have we sold these? Since the mid-90s.
Is there a stockpile somewhere that people can buy?
Not anymore.
Mm-hmm. The pots or the mixers?
Both.
Wow.
Yeah, the wholesale of the company thing. Tossed that into a big unknown. I'm not sure.
Pot in it.
All of
the rain
mixers.
The rain
have
ones do.
The Teflon.
All of the rain ones do.
Yeah.
Yeah. But really, I don't know who's going to.
There are other people who are building advanced fader technology. There's a company called InnoFader.
Yes.
Yep. I almost put them up here.
Yeah.
But there's a few other examples in the market, too.
Yeah. But they build a fader that you can retrofit into several models of mixers, so they're pretty much that's the focus of their company. They make faders to retrofit into Pioneer, into Rain, into several other models.
They're good faders.
InnoFader.
I've got one here. I'll show it to you after.
No. So that's kind of the crossfader discussion, because that was an immediate problem, you know. When you go through, let's try to finish this up.
Yep.
There's a bunch of troubleshooting things here. We immediately run into problems where Napster ruined the audio quality of many, you know, DJ systems, or you'd get corrupt files because you shared them with somebody and the file's corrupt. And so the software will detect that stuff for you and show it to you, or you have to get rid of that file or re-encode it. All these computer issues we talked about, how USB drivers and the OS changes and the software has to get updated, and sometimes your computer CPU power isn't enough to give you that real-time feel. And so we did a lot of tech support trying to help people understand how to get that optimized for different slow computers. We already talked a little bit about tone arbs, cabling, rumble, and noise, and we'll see in the next few slides here to finish up the slides about the issues with the vinyl. We talked early on about the absolute and relative mode, make it feel like real vinyl or not worry about skipping. And then the scope view, where you can look at the burn and wear or dust. So there's several things in the manual. Here's three slides on ways that the software can show you an oscilloscope, basically, that shows you, oh, here's a good signal. You got a nice clean signal coming, and you got the circle is large and round, so that's a good signal. Over here says you got no signal because, oh, maybe you haven't plugged it in correctly, for example. Check your connections. Or the turntable is vibrating. Oh, the subwoofer is too loud, so the noise that we're supposed to get is you got a lot of noise on the signal. Or if you plug in the phono input into the line input in your mixer, the circle's too small.
No RIAA.
decoding.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what the RIAA gives you, the difference between a small circle and a large one. We can get further. You know, here's dust on your needle. That's what dust on your needle looks like to the oscilloscope view. Here's more. So I don't want to go through all of them. You haven't grounded your turntable. That's what it looks like. Oh, if you have too long a cable between your turntable and the DJ mixer, you get noise. Now your control signal's not going to work very well.
And your cue is backwards over here.
Yeah. I mean, damaged needle.
Thing, really.
Yeah, exactly. So you can see we can troubleshoot a lot of things by putting it in the scope view and the software. It really helps you understand what's going on.
And these are Lissajou patterns.
Yeah. So you can see you can go to town here. There's more. There's left channel is noisy. Right channel is noisy. Signal, somebody summed the mono. Somebody summed the turntable to mono. Now it's not going to work at all. You know, all these things you can figure out from the front of the record. So that's the slideshow world. So what else did you need to do?
Let's go back in. There's a couple of things. Shall we show that just right now in real time, the scope view? Let's do the scope view.
Sure.
There you go. Show us what's going on.
Okay.
That's a pretty good signal right there.
Yeah.
There you go. Nice and clean. No dust on his needle. Wouldn't it be nice to know if there's dust on your needle? Because remember, you're not going to listen to this signal. The control signal is just going to do weird stuff. It's going to skip around or, you know. So there's your scope view.
So this noise sensitivity is a really important factor for when you go into a club and you might have a lot of low-end rumbling on your vinyl. This sensitivity, you click and hold this estimate button here. And whilst the record's playing, and it works out the sensitivity of the vinyl from the actual vibrations.
It takes a noise print.
It takes a noise print.
Yeah.
And and then you just do the same with the other one when you've changed that over, and you're going to not get that low bass kind of rumble situation. But also what it does do is make it a lot less sensitive for scratches. So, for example, if I do it slowing it down. Here, let's show you, actually. With that, that's pretty decent, right? If I make that less sensitive, it can't. Because it's such a low signal, it can't handle it.
The noise has been reduced because you've said it's super loud.
Yeah.
How about if you go all the way back here? Is it
super sensitive? That would be your ideal world. Anyway, yeah.
Groovy.
Psychedelics.
All right, so there's a couple of things.
Effects.
Effects, yeah. You want to show us the effects side?
Oh, yeah. So there's some basic effects.
This whole strip is... effects.
This
effects one,
echo, reverb, flanges, both on same set.
Do Pandelay.
On each.
I love Pandelay.
It's Pandelay.
Yeah, right there.
Okay.
Nice, thank you.
So yeah,
you can stack delays. There's all kinds of.
Yeah, there's...
You spend all day in here.
Yeah, multi-effects options or single-effects options. Yeah, you could literally... If effects are your thing, you can get lost.
Okay, so I'd like to travel back in time. To a young Jamie Simmons that you find your heart's desire presented to you by some experience. What experience was that?
My brother introducing me to this, wherever it is. First song I heard this song, and I was just like, whoa, what's that? And I just had to do it. I just started ruining my father's turntables. And this is the song, this Herbie Hancock classic hip-hop.
And this came out in January of 1983?
Yeah, I believe you're right. I'm not quite
That's
sure.
That's when it was on Rock America.
So I was eight.
8 years old.
Yeah. Yeah, man, he was my idol. So back in the UK, the Street Sounds Electro Hip Hop series were huge. And he mixed every single one. There's 25 different like compilation records. Yeah. And it was all like that underground hip hop from 1981, I think it was.
He's stylish.
Yeah.
He's Mr. Stylish.
Dude.
Damn show. He's a great guy.
Man, incredible DJ. And like back then, it was just, I mean, they were records, mixed records. Like,
they didn't have this. They didn't have
No, he, and the tempos here were so, a lot more varied back then. So he was really on top of his game, man. And those albums are what just kept all of us, we were just obsessed with them and breakdancing and graffiti and it kind of just.
So if you're 8 years old in 1983, I was 23, so we were doing different things with our records.
Yeah, we were.
If you were my little brother and you came into my room and did that with my records, we'd have a problem.
Yeah, my brother used to regularly have issues with me.
See, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it was kind of his fault for introducing
well,
me
That's good.
To the stuff.
But you've discovered your heart's desire and you're able to fulfill it, which is, that's just fantastic. And then you're able to share with us things I had no idea, the depth of it. See, this is like the drum meeting that we had. It's there's so much behind it. Oh, now I see how someone could take their entire life and dedicate it to perfecting this art. And so I'm so glad we've been able to share it with you. Are there any questions that anything that we haven't gone over that we need to?
Well, I was curious, have you mixed any of your own records of you playing turntables?
Do you mean recording wise?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm actually recording a record at the moment with a New York MC. And yeah, I've been breaking parts down. Like I'll play maybe like a clav sound, and then I'll, instead of just playing it, I'll just scratch what I played in and kind of manipulate it like that, just to give it a slightly different feel.
Sort of like what he was saying in terms of a band of turntablists playing together to create a single song.
Yeah.
Yes.
Cool. Yeah, so when I first started writing beats, the turntable were my instrument. That and a four-track was what I started writing music on when I was like 14.
So how's your studio these days?
Pretty sweet.
How was it not too long ago?
Pretty bad.
Right.
Someone fixed it.
Thank you.
We're using an RTA, Rain Real-Time Analyzer.
Steve went to his house
and tweaked. Noise, and a 30-band MQ302. Which is a stereo 30-band EQ, and because what they had was very sad, actually. Brilliant equipment, amazing equipment. Atom speakers.
The room,
but
you mean?
Well, no, actually, because the settings on the back of the speaker were very, very low. And there was a lot of extra bass, which was going out into the house.
And rattling all of our paintings.
Rattling. She's an artist, and she has paintings, and they were rattling. And so having things balanced approach, just like the RIAA curve, really, if you take and make a room right, then it doesn't have that problem. And we did that, and so your life is your life.
Able to.
So much better.
Outside of turntablism, I also mix and involved in mastering, too. So it's it was essential being able to, hear.
It was great that it was able to be done so well, because you had everything pretty much set up in the room appropriately.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the actual equalization was all that was needed.
Oh, it's crazy as
and
well.
So it's without an RTA,
like
doing surgery without an X-ray. So let's see. I think the spleen is here, right? You take the RTA, and you're able to actually flatten things out so that what's going into the system is what's coming out. So that's another benefit that Rain did for me, anyway.
Yeah.
Anything else?
Thanks, Ryan.
Okay.
Yes.
James, just like a couple of names, new or old, like that really inspire you. Like, who'd you listen to as like an inspiring DJ or something?
Well, when I was young, it was definitely Run DMC and Jam Master J. Were like Jam Master J set up Scratch Academy in New York. And Rob Swift from the Executioners in New York, he's amazing. D Styles is my favorite scratch DJ. He's just so funky, man. He's like,
he's great.
Incredible.
He's one of the Beat Junkies. You'll find him in the Beat Junkies.
Yeah.
J-Rock is really cool, too. J-Rock is...
Yeah, J-Rock's very dope. They're all very dope. Babu. Yeah. Cuba. Ridiculous.
It's,
you know.
Mike, who is the Beastie Boys DJ.
Yeah.
And it's very sad that the majority of our committee wasn't able to be here because they are disappointed in not being able to become DJs. Their average age probably is 62, but I think, but we can tell them at
they
least
can
it was good.
Come see me and get one-to-one lessons. If
that's
they
true.
Really
that's
what
they're,
make up
they're going to start that here.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Any other questions? In that case, I believe we found out about the science of turntablism and what's behind it. So let's give Jamie a big hand, please. And we'll be able to be out of here by 10 for the school's desire and keep everybody happy.
Awesome. Thank you.
Excellent.
Thanks
for all right. Thank,
thank
you all.
Guys.
Thank you.
Adjourned.
Music. Good music.
Something.
Turn on the lights.
Well, turn the tables.
So we're going to trip.
What's the music?
Because we're 62. Oh, he's not laughing.
Yeah. He's partway there.
Oh, yeah.
Well, halfway there. Got the J.
I am not.
I know he's got the J.
I'm not involved in that.
Thanks, Gary.
I wish I could say that. I didn't actually.
They might come out with another one. I'm not there anymore. Sure. We'll be right back.